Hey, I'm glad you made it. My name is Tricia Griffith. I am the proud owner of WebSleuths.com and the host of WebSleuths Radio. On this edition, we interview the incredible Cynic. He is one of our members on WebSleuths.com, and I'm sure you know of him. He's very famous. And we have Keith Greer. Keith Greer is the Rebecca Zahow family attorney. And if you thought the Rebecca Zahow civil case was over, oh, no, 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 my true crime darlings, you couldn't be more wrong. Here's an interview recorded over the phone, but it still has fascinating information from Cynic and Keith Greer on Web Sleuths Radio. On July 13, 2011, 32-year-old Rebecca Zahow was found hanging outside a bedroom balcony, gagged, hands bound behind her back, feet bound, and she was naked. The man who discovered her was Adam Shacknai. Now, he's the brother of her wealthy boyfriend, Jonah. The day before, Jonah's 6-year-old son, Max, had a terrible accident, fell over the railing in his dad's massive mansion. Rebecca was babysitting him. Max clung to life for a few days at the hospital. Well, suddenly, Adam Shacknai comes to support his brother, and the next thing you know, the next morning, he goes out and he claims to have found Rebecca Zahow in that position, hanging naked outside a bedroom balcony, gagged, hands tied behind her back, the whole thing. I don't know anybody that's ever committed suicide like that. Well, the Shacknai family, they were relieved because the sheriff's department came in and said, yeah, it's a suicide. Done. Over. Right? Case closed? Not quite. They did not plan on the Zahow family's determination and also the determination of a man named Keith Greer. They sued Adam Shacknai, and they were able to prove in a court, civil court, that he was responsible for Rebecca Zahow's death. Now, they were awarded money, but, you know, as those things go, Adam's lawyers are appealing, and it can get really messy. So what happened was to settle with the Shacknai family. And I read in the newspaper that Adam Shacknai had no idea they were going to settle, that his attorneys were going to settle. He was very upset. He even blurted out the amount, $600,000. So to clear everything up and also to make sure that everybody understands that Adam Shacknai's responsible verdict, being held responsible for Rebecca Zahow's death, still holds. This has nothing to do with the verdict. It just had to do with the money awarded after the verdict, since it was a civil case. Joining us tonight, our very own Cynic. Listen to that. I sound like I own him. Well, I kind of do. He is a great member on Web Sleuths, and he knows this case inside and out. And joining us, a good friend of Web Sleuths, somebody that has been helping us all along to understand the consequences and the ins and outs of this case. It is Rebecca Zahow's family attorney, Keith Greer. Mr. Greer, thank you for joining us tonight.
It's nice to talk to you again, Tricia. And Cynic, it's been a while.
Yes, it has.
Lots happened since we last spoke.
Well, has been a lot happening. Everybody kind of thought, well, this case is done now that he's been found responsible, but that's not the case, because Rebecca's family is still fighting to overturn the coroner's suicide call. They're trying to make it at least an indeterminate death. Undetermined death. But, Mr. Greer, let's go back. Okay, the day the verdict is announced, your side was awarded how much?
Oh, $5.2 million, roughly.
Okay.
A lot.
And then that's when all the negotiation starts. And that's when lawyers meet with lawyers. And rather than keep filing, you know, suits and trying to get the $5.2 million, since it was never about money. And I don't know, you're probably not allowed to talk about the actual settlement, so I won't ask you about the actual amount. But then they got together, the lawyers for the insurance company that was defending Adam Shacknai got together with you and the Zahow family, and you were able to come up with a settlement. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting because before the trial, I told the family, you know, way early, probably 2 years before the trial, when we really figured out, we had the facts and we had a really solid idea of who did it and how it all happened. And I told the family, now would be the time to settle. And what if they gave you $10 million? You know, there's a lot of money on that other side, and, you know, $10 million bucks. If they would give you $10 million, would you settle the case? So you could take that money, you know, put it half of it into something that Rebecca would have enjoyed doing in her lifetime, and, you know, it's generational wealth. The rest of your family for generations will live comfortably. Would you take it?
Mm-hmm.
And they said, they took the time to think about it over the weekend, and they said no. You know, any dollar that they would spend, they would feel bad because it was blood money. You know, they really want to get Rebecca's death certificate changed from suicide to homicide, or at least get the suicide off of it. And so we marched through, and we did the trial. And actually, on the eve of trial, they turned down a hard $1 million offer. $1 million was offered, and they said no. And so we pushed through, and obviously we got a verdict, which will stand forever. Once the verdict is made, it's engraved in stone. You don't change a verdict. Unless you do, I guess the court sets it aside, which doesn't happen, didn't happen here. And then I sat and waited. I didn't enter a judgment. Now, you intimated or alluded to that a bit in your opening there. The jury's verdict is made. That's the decision. When you want to convert that into a right to get money, you have to file a judgment. And that judgment then is what you use then to levy bank accounts and, you know, repossess property, et cetera. That's a legal instrument. So I didn't file the judgment for 8 months because mm-hmm. we were waiting for the sheriff to come out. You know, if the sheriff was allegedly reconsidering his opinion, and if he came out and said, nope, we're going to reconsider this, you know, we're going to reclassify it as an open case or as undetermined or as homicide, then the families really, we've accomplished what we want. You know, there wasn't even really a need for a judgment. It's done. You know, may have even dismissed the case completely without a settlement, you know, at that point mm-hmm. in time, because you really would have accomplished it. Unfortunately, the sheriff came back with the hokiest darn presentation I've ever seen. And we are going to be having our own press conference eventually here and going over all of the things that the sheriff did wrong again, because it was really just a terrible propaganda job, I think, by the sheriff. It was awful. It was just mm-hmm. awful. But then I filed the judgment. And shortly after that, we resolved the case. And Adam was not a part of it. Adam, he was settled around. You know, he's already said, you know, I'm kind of mm-hmm. constrained about what I can talk about, but I can confirm it wasn't him. It was with his insurance company. It was resolved. And so right. now the company, and now that it's done, and then we withdrew the judgment, which means no more appeals. Done. So I was really happy with that. Not that we were 99.9% likely to win, mm-hmm. as it just did. We appeals are hardly ever successful, and in this case, we had a very, very good trial judge, and I think we're highly, highly, highly likely to win. But it's just a lot of work. And I'm sure the insurance mm-hmm. company looked at that thing, you know, lots of money to spend on lawyers. And so I was glad the work was done. But even better than that, now there are resources available to continue pursuing Adam Shacknai. We have we had a very limited budget for a trial. We spent over $250,000,
wow.
which was just pinching every penny. And I had to mm-hmm. I cut several experts. We just couldn't afford. I couldn't afford a psychiatrist. There were a couple of forensic experts that I just couldn't afford. So we really had to pick and choose which experts we went with and which ones we cut loose. And so now we'll be taking resources and getting some additional experts on board, doing some additional workups, even making the case even stronger. And when we have that work done, which should be in the next few months, we'll then be coming forward and petitioning the medical examiner, also known as the coroner, but this medical examiner in San Diego, to change his opinion. And mm-hmm. if he doesn't, then we were going to take him to court. There is an avenue to take him up on a writ and have an independent judge look at it and see if his decision is reasonable. And I don't mm-hmm. think that any judge looking at this evidence is going to say suicide. Just not going to happen. So we're about halfway there. We're about halfway to where we want to be. Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. Please continue. You're okay. Much more interesting than I could ever be. Please continue.
So the other thing we're looking at is a potential civil rights, if we can file a civil rights action against the sheriff. I'm not a civil rights expert. I may be one by the end of this case, but we're looking into that now to see if there is any type of legal avenue against the sheriff. This family is not letting go of this. They have their energy is staying high. They're reinvigorating, and you know they've been legitimized too. You know, because you look at shows like Dateline and 2020 that really gave the family, gave me really a bad review, bad name. You know,
right.
It was just, it was, I it, you know, my mother even told me she didn't like those. You know, that's, she was,
yeah.
My mom was upset at how those were handled. But because, you know, we were the charlatans, you know, we were the ones who weren't, you know, accepting the truth, who were, you know, ignoring reality that their sister had committed suicide. And those are the kind of things that are being said. Well, you know, now that we have a jury and the judge in the case came out with a very strong preliminary order in response to Adam's attorney's motions to have the jury to have the verdict set aside. And to
Can you speak to that for a moment
yeah.
and tell us, like, kind of some of the highlights of this ruling she made?
Yeah, because I think the biggest part she went over the evidence, you know, and just the things that everybody has talked about the writing on the door. She made an interesting point that Rebecca was an artist, you know, and we touched on this briefly in trial, but you know that Rebecca was an artist and was really good with a brush. And this very amateuristic writing on the door just wasn't consistent with what you would expect from her. The height of the writing was discussed. I mean, she literally went through every piece of evidence really that we laid out, the knots, the handwriting, the style of the handwriting being consistent with Adams. You know, it was a very good job. The judge was clearly paying attention to this case the whole time. She was on the edge of her seat, you know, leaning over her podium up there, looking at folks, looking at the evidence very closely. She, you know, sometimes once in a while you'll see judges drifting off or, you know, maybe not being real excited about a case. Every day she was just right on top of things, really impressive. But what she did, which was really powerful, was she could have just talked about the evidence. Just about what was presented to the jury. But she went a step further, and she called out the sheriff. And she said that the sheriff's investigation raised more questions than it answered. I mean, that's when you have a sheriff who's saying on television in public, I'm certain this was suicide. Literally, he said that. I'm confident this is suicide. And then a judge says, that investigation raised more questions than it answered. And at the end of the very last line of that ruling says, it's in light of the sheriff's investigation, it was clearly still fair to say, or fair to ask, who murdered Rebecca Zahow? And so you very seldom, I think, see a local judge calling out a local sheriff. And that really was invigorating to see that, okay, you know, the judge got it too. It wasn't the Adams attorneys were saying that this was a jury that was swayed by emotion, you know, that I must have some magical powers like the Pied Piper or something.
That
persuaded them to put blinders on and ignore the evidence. Well, they said that about a jury, but you know, a seasoned Superior Court judge who sat through hundreds of trials, for her to come out as strong as she did, I think that was, you know, one of the more powerful things that came out of this, and really legitimized the family's plight here.
Right, that is pretty amazing that she did come out and chastise the sheriff like that. I'm going to go to Cynic. Cynic, I'm sure you are busting open with questions here. Why don't you go ahead, and then when I come back, I want to talk to you about just a couple more things, Mr. Greer, because I know you're really busy, but we are just anxious to squeeze as much information out of you as we can while we have you on the air. So, Cynic, go ahead.
All right. Thanks, Tricia. well, this is actually a point that I raised with Keith just before we went to air. If regardless of whether what Adam said was true or not regarding the amount, and, you know, I understand that despite the fact that Adam likes to do a lot of talking about a settlement that he shouldn't be talking about. You know, I appreciate the fact that, you know, you're under some constraint not to, to speak to much of or any of what happened there. But just in general terms, what are the ramifications of somebody, you know, revealing, as in this case, Adam appears to have revealed the amount of the settlement? Are there any penalties, repercussions to somebody doing something like that, just in general terms?
You know, as, and actually, since you and I spoke earlier, I thought about it for a few minutes here, and he wasn't actually party to any type of confidentiality agreement that I'm aware of. Okay. And I doubt that he was. So I think it's likely that his lawyers told him not to discuss it. I don't see any ramifications to him. There's ramifications to us because, you know, anytime you're under an obligation not to say something and then somebody else already says it, it really kind of takes some of the pressure off of you, because if you breach a confidentiality agreement, you're liable for any damages it causes by you sharing information you shouldn't. So when the information is already shared by somebody else, it'd be hard for anybody to say that any one of us sharing the information would change anything, right? It's already out there. Heck, it made every newspaper, every local news. I mean, it spread like wildfire. So I doubt if one of us had loose lips and something slipped out, it would get anywhere near the coverage that that Adam Schacht and I got, you know, in that 2 days. I guess he was all over the air for 2 days.
Oh, sure. Touching on one of the points that you mentioned, you know, one of your highest priorities, if not the top priority, is looking for the medical examiner to change the manner of death. I presume this would involve the medical examiner who was at the December press conference, Glenn Wagner, his name?
Yes.
San Diego
yes.
County. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, from what I saw of him briefly, he didn't seem like...
seem like he was too interested in helping us out, did he?
He didn't even seem to be too interested to be there in general, but, you know, this is basically just likely to end up in court, I would imagine, right? I mean, you know, I can't see
I think
him
it's
being,
likely.
Yeah. Okay,
I felt sorry for all those guys. For those other sheriff's officers that were up there, I felt bad for them because they were towing the party line, you know, and saying,
sure.
Oh, this is suicide, this is suicide. I'm looking at them thinking, oh, man, you must be thinking right now, this is not what I thought I would be doing when I got into law, you know?
Yeah.
I thought I would be telling the truth and doing the right thing, and here I am standing up in front of people and saying this. I felt very, very awkward for them. Because, you know, they looked enough of the evidence to know. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Sure. What was the situation? Were you invited to, or could you have been at the conference, by the way?
This is great. This
I presume
well,
you
you're good.
Invited, but
you're good. You're good. You kinda,
yeah.
You're good. These are interesting little stories. No, I heard about it and showed up that day. And when I'm seeing other people going up to the door and getting in, some people being turned away because it was really for not just press only, but people mm-hmm. with the San Diego PD press pass. The sheriff doesn't have his own press pass, so you had to have a special law enforcement press pass. So even like Sasha Fu, who's a big reporter here locally,
mm-hmm.
Was initially
yes.
turned away because she didn't have that pass. She eventually got in.
Oh.
But people were just getting turned away. When I showed up there, two off. A phone call was made. Two officers came down, asked me to join them. They took me inside the building, away from everybody, off to a private room. I think they were presuming there was going to be some type of, you know, altercation or some type of scene that, you know, they didn't want to have show up on the news how, you know, family attorney denied, you know, in a big scuffle or something. And I was just a smile on my face. The whole thing was just silly. And the look on these guys' face, they were really worried, you know, like something was going to, you know, go down, you know, he was going to get ugly. I said, okay, guys, so you're telling me I can't go up? Yeah. Family's representative can't come in. Yeah, okay. You know, that's thanks for letting me know. You know, and I was very,
yes,
I was very
yeah.
polite, very professional. And I feel bad for all these guys. You know, we got a chance
right.
to know some of them from depositions. And one of the officers, I'm not going to use a name, but one of the officers that escorted me that day, I chatted with him several times throughout the course of this litigation. Super nice guy. And I could tell he just felt uncomfortable, you know, with the process. It was, yeah, anyway, it's kind of funny. So I guess it could have been more exciting than it was, but I just thought it was funny. So.
Yes.
So we sat out in the car. We sat out in the car, and I put it on the phone. It was live stream. So I watched it on my phone with a reporter and a camera crew in my back seat filming us, watching this thing. So it'll probably show up somewhere, the comments we were making. But anyway.
Okay.
Well, that's too funny.
Good question.
Hypothetically, let's go down the road of you taking the medical examiner to task, to court, and ultimately, you know, you prevail, and there's a change in the manner of death. What then would be your next step, or what could you use that to do? As your next step?
You know, assuming that we haven't already filed a lawsuit against the sheriff, which if we have a lawsuit filed against the sheriff, those two things would, you know, the medical examiner changing his opinion would help the lawsuit. In fact, maybe even resolve it, because I have a feeling that the sheriff is going to say he relies upon the medical examiner's opinion, and then the medical examiner says he relies upon the sheriff's opinion. So they're kind of, you know, circular argument, you know, looking out for each other. I think it would be Department of Justice. It would be some U.S. attorney. I mean, some other agency, I think, to get – if we now have – I think that the sheriff, if it was changed to either undetermined or homicide, I think the sheriff would be obligated to do something at that point. So we have kind of a pincer movement going here. Either we can either get the sheriff motivated by having the medical examiner change the opinion, or having a judge change the medical examiner's opinion for him, or a civil lawsuit directly against the sheriff. So we've got two major avenues we're looking at now. I think it's likely both will happen at the same time.
Yeah, I suppose undetermined would be the, you know, sort of the, I didn't say the coward's way out, but the a way out without going
easy
all
way
the
out.
Way to,
yeah, easy.
You know, to homicide. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Mr. Greer, I have a question. Mm-hmm. I was really curious when the jury came back. It was a 9-3, and in a civil lawsuit, you do not have to have a unanimous vote. You said that you felt that all of the jurors felt like it was murder, but they disagreed on the actual charge. It wasn't that somebody believed. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I think there was one juror that never changed his mind. There was one juror that in his jury questionnaire said the sheriff did a great investigation. No reason to change anything. You know, the sheriff is right. And it filled that out right on his, and I should have not let him be a juror. I remember I wrote no, you know, right on the cover of his questionnaire. And for some reason during voir dire, something happened for me to change my mind, and I left him on the panel. Now, if I was in a criminal case, I wouldn't have left him on the panel, clearly. But I think something in me I just let him ride for some reason. I don't remember what it was.
Was he the only one that
never
voted
changed.
No?
He was the only chance, yeah. But he would have said no. He never would have changed his mind. The other two of the three that didn't vote, the other two just my understanding is they believed it was murder. They weren't ready to say it was Adam. And so because deliberations stop once you have nine people vote, they never really got a chance to develop the evidence any further. You know, it's like done, move on. And then you'll note afterwards, though, after that, when they voted on damages, like what are the damages, et cetera, those two voted with the rest of the other nine on the rest of the findings in the verdict at that point in time. So I think that we would have had, you know, 11-1 had they been forced to come to decisions. And that one was my fault. Not people that are clearly biased and already have a preconceived opinion of something that's not likely to change at the trial, those are the ones you really need to get off the jury. You want people with an open mind who are going to look at the evidence. And he clearly qualified as one of those guys. But, you know, I just left him on. He said something that I thought, you know, I remember him saying a couple of things. I'm thinking maybe he could be fair.
Mm-hmm.
It was, you know, borderline. I think I probably did ask the judge to have him dismissed for cause.
Mm-hmm.
And it was denied, I think, is what happened. And so, you know, I was so happy with that jury. When they first sat down, I was happy.
Mm-hmm.
I passed, you know, the way the process works, each attorney gets a chance to take somebody off the jury, kick them off the jury panel, and then a new person comes in and fills that seat. Then you go to the other mm-hmm. lawyer, and they get to kick somebody off. So it's a deselection process. This is the first time in my career at a jury trial where the first round, I didn't kick anybody off.
Wow.
I said, I'm happy. I'm done. Now, this is great. Let's go. Let's go. And so
I think it's fascinating that this one guy, after everybody else saw the exact same thing he did, mm-hmm. came up with this conclusion. He had to have had that conclusion all along. He had to have gone in there already biased, because you mm-hmm. can't look at that evidence
yeah.
and not at least wonder, could it be? So he probably was already saying no suicide, right?
Yeah, he said he agreed with the sheriff from the beginning, and he didn't want to be there either. You know,
mm-hmm.
he was probably not the optimum juror for the job. But you know
yeah.
what? He sat through 6 weeks. He made it every day on time, and
mm-hmm.
At the end of the day, it didn't really matter what he thought or didn't think. So
he did his jury duty, which is good.
Yes, sir.
Well, listen,
right.
I know you're very busy. Do you have any final comments for our members at Web Sleuths and everybody that has followed you and your incredible work that you have been doing for the Zahal family? Any final
yeah,
words
you know
before
what?
We have you on
well,
again?
Well, you know what? I want to do another send out to Web Sleuth, though, because part of our now, we're going back and re-looking at all the evidence and preparing our
mm-hmm.
next, you know, submission to the medical examiner. And now, when you go through trial, it really synthesizes everything. You know, you're forced to really immerse yourself in all the facts. And so there were a lot of facts in this case, a lot of
mm-hmm.
twists and turns, a lot of weird connections. And so having gone through trial and gotten that, my level of understanding of the case now is very high. So when I look at the evidence starting my new review, I'm seeing
mm-hmm.
all kinds of things. Well, I could have done this in court. I could have done that a little bit more, et cetera. One of the things I got back, I got an email from one of your Web Sleuth listeners talking about how Adam didn't need the table to cut her down. The
mm-hmm.
gentleman sent over an email with, you know, Rebecca was 26 inches off the ground, and she's 5'3", and the average height of a face is like 9 or 10 inches. He did all the
mm-hmm.
math so that Adam could have easily cut her down without the table.
Wow,
and,
that's interesting.
We got that really early on, and it was something. And that's what I actually portrayed that at trial with the mannequin. We had a mannequin
mm-hmm.
you know, hanging, her same size, hanging the same height she was hanging from, and
mm-hmm.
I had a mock-up of the same knife and showed that. And I'm the same height as Adam, and showed that I could
mm-hmm.
easily cut her down without pulling that table over. Well, there's
right.
in this when I was going back over stuff, and I saw this email from your Web Sleuth listener, and his numbers were spot on all the way
mm-hmm.
through. And that's one of the new pieces of evidence that we're developing for going to the medical examiner, because are you ready? This will be your Web Sleuth first. You ready? This has never been heard anywhere, right here.
If you
go back to the newspapers, you're going to find a picture of Adam Shacknife showing how he cut Rebecca down. He's on the stand
mm-hmm.
testifying, and he's showing how he has his left arm around her and his right arm extended up into the sky to cut
mm-hmm.
her down, right?
Right.
Well, I took that Web Sleuth email, you know, they got,
mm-hmm.
and doing the math, and he would have actually been leaning down to cut her. He wouldn't have been reaching over his head. He would have been reaching about shoulder level to cut her down.
Wow.
So a piece of evidence that we didn't have beforehand.
That is amazing.
Because we now have from the trial, because he had his hand raising up in the air saying that that's
mm-hmm.
how he cut her down. And interestingly, that is maybe the height that it would have been if she after she was cut off and the rope went slack,
mm-hmm.
That may have been about the height that it was at.
Right.
But it shows it was staged, because when she was hanging on it and it was taut, he would have had to lean straight forward or down a little bit,
right,
rather than up
wow.
high.
Wow.
So we'll be putting together a presentation on that and part of our submission to the medical examiner.
That is big news, and I am so glad that the Web Sleuth members were able to help you out, because I'll be honest with you, and Dan, Cynic and I have talked about this a lot. We have law enforcement a lot of times just doesn't like what Web Sleuth, what we do. They think we're interfering, that we don't have anything else to do with our lives, and they hate that we want to help. Now, there are a few law enforcement agencies that are different, and they actually come to us and say, hey, what can you help us with this little thing? And now hearing this from you, that is so heartwarming, because that is something, you know, after you file it and it becomes public, that's something I'll be able to use and say, look, here's what one of our members did, you know, in this case. So come on, law enforcement.
You guys,
21st century.
You guys have been, Adam Shacknight rags on you guys all the time.
He does?
look at the quotes what he says about me. He says about me, he says, yeah, you know that Greer who's having his case run by a bunch of folks online, you know,
yeah.
He might even have used Sleuth. He might have used Web Sleuth's name. I'm not sure. But he's several times out in public said, yeah, you know, Greer gets all of his materials from these online people across the country, but you'll read some of the article, you'll find the quotes in there.
And
it cracks me up, because, you know, it's partially true. So,
well, yeah, but it's a good thing, you know. Absolutely.
You know,
well, anytime I can annoy somebody that has done something like this, I feel is a good day. So
it is a good day.
Anyway. Well, thank you, Mr. Greer. Like I said, I know you're very, very busy, so we could keep you on for 14 hours, but we won't. Maybe next time, okay?
Here's what I need you to do, though, is get out there, keep digging for facts. Keep looking for stuff. There have been people who've retired from the Sheriff's Department. There's people who know Adam Shacknight, you know, who've heard of, you know, there's still information being generated out there, and it's... I really appreciate everybody would not let go of this one and keep digging.
You can count on it. Absolutely.
Tricia?
Yes?
Could I just jump in for one second?
Sure.
On the forum, you posted that, you know, there'd be an upcoming podcast with Keith, and he invited questions. One of the questions, just like to toss at least one out here, it said reportedly Keith Greer was able to do an enactment using the actual iron bed from the bedroom. How did Keith get access to the bed, and what were the results? I'm sure that that's not true, but just if you could address that for us.
How should see? You've got to learn to trust your people.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I cannot deny that.
Really.
That's I can tell you that I got the bed from there was an investigator in the case, not working for me, but who was out there looking at things and. Talked to Jonah Shacknight's housekeeper that she had left his employ, but when she was there, it was after the murder, and Jonah was getting rid of furniture, and that included the bed.
Mm-hmm.
And she took the bed. It's a really nice bed. It's very heavy wrought iron. I mean, really substantial, actually. She couldn't sleep in it because it was a deathbed. You know, she had it, she couldn't use it, so she gave it to the investigator. And then some number of years later, the investigator and I crossed paths, and he said, you know what, I've got this in my garage. Do you want it? And I said, yeah, I'll put it. I have a whole room, you know, that's dedicated to this stuff. We'll put it in the room, and I didn't know if we'd ever use it. I can't say that... You know, I can't disclose all of this, but there was a very scientific reenactment done, which was much more expensive than anything I could afford, and very impressively done, that I can't talk to you about because it is going to be on the air a number of months from now in a show about the Zahau case.
Okay.
I'm restricted by confidentiality agreement to nest close. So if you touch bases with me in a couple of months, I'll hopefully have the freedom to discuss the show. And this group of people really did a scientific analysis, really incredible. In fact, helped us a lot with preparing what we need to give to the medical examiner. So, so cynic, never be so sure.
There you go.
I was just being cynical.
You're being cynical, yeah. Right? That's true. That's your job. That's right. Yeah. That's what you do. Yeah.
Well, we'll definitely have you back on again real soon, Mr. Greer. And again, we do appreciate everything you've done. And give our best to the Zahal family, please, okay?
I will, but you're killing me. I need one more question here. These are good.
Oh, yeah. Oh, good. If you can stay, I'm trying to help you. I thought you had to go. Oh, heck. Cynic, go ahead. You have the forum pulled up.
Well, I'd like to say that I very much look forward to you doing your own press conference addressing the points that were raised during the December press conference, because that was, I've been, just for lack of time, I've been just itching to do my own sort of rebuttal, on the forum, because some of the points and some of the comments were just so outrageous and so showing such misunderstanding of the facts of the case.
No, it's not. It's not. It's not. It's not. It's not a misunderstanding. They understand. It's misinformation. It's it's propaganda
to
support their. Yeah. Oh man. You know, like for example, they said at the press conference that they reached to an outside agency. It was the FBI, and the FBI has a good profiling group that, you know, can analyze whether somebody's suicidal, whether they're a murderer, whatever. And the FBI said there wasn't enough information available for them to make any type of determination whether Rebecca was suicidal or not, right?
Mm-hmm.
So these are the experts that say you can't. There's not enough there. You know, she writes some poems to herself about how she's upset with Jonah. You know, does that make her suicidal? So they talked to the experts who said there's not enough information to make that decision. You know, what do they do at their press conference? They say, oh, here's some poems she wrote. Oh, she was suicidal. And they know because the experts have told them you can't make that decision from those poems. But what do they do? You know, here's the poem, she was suicidal. It just really it's a disservice to the public,
strongly
the way they handle the whole thing.
Yeah.
It is. It just drives me nuts.
I guess one of the points that they mentioned with sort of relating to that is the fact that during the conference, I think they said that they were able to meet their deadline of 3 months, but the further 6 months or whatever it turned out to be was because they were unable to get the information from essentially the Zahal.
Yeah,
and,
no, you know
the
what? We have a legal word for that. Actually, it's a phrase. Bullshit.
Lying.
Absolute bullshit. It was that. I know I saw that. And up at the end, at the very end, they asked for a couple of things, and we needed some. They asked us. It was really weird. Like, they're pressing us for something. And then, like, 2 days later, they say, nope, we're done. We're going to wrap it up. I said, well, you don't have these things you just asked for. He says, nope, we're going to close it today. I said, well, wouldn't you rather, if you've said these things are important, wouldn't you rather have them to look at them before you come up with the final decision?
Mm-hmm.
Nope, this is our date set. So they were, that was a hard date for them that they had set to make this release. They didn't want any more information. Mm-hmm. They weren't looking to make a new decision or a determination. They were just, you saw what they did. They were just ready to regurgitate the same thing and try.
Oh, sure.
And that's why they didn't don't allow the public in to ask questions. Very controlled environments. Very, very cursory kind of explanation of everything. And it was clear to me, and that was the same time that Adam Schachter's lawyers filed their motion for a new trial and motion to set aside the verdict. That all happened in the same week. So out of the blue, nothing happens for 8 months. There's no reason for Adam's people to file anything, right? No reason.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause I haven't filed a judgment. Their
sure.
time to file appeals and things doesn't happen until I file a judgment. And so they all of a sudden file their papers and think, why out of the blue now, I guess three, I thought it was like 3 weeks before Christmas or 2 weeks before Christmas, thinking, do they just want to screw with me? Just mess up my holidays? Mm-hmm. That doesn't seem right. I mean, I know some of these guys are pretty reasonable lawyers, really. And mm-hmm. what's going on? And then, boom, 3-4 days later, you know, sheriff makes this decision going to come out. And it was like, it was a concerted, it appeared anyway, like a concerted effort. So for the media sure. purposes, boom, motion to dismiss. I mean, motion to set aside the verdict, motion for a new trial, and sheriff says it's still suicide. It really, at least to me, appeared like they were in cahoots with each other, the Shaq Knight camp and the sheriff. Mm-hmm. Now, maybe it's an extreme coincidence that in the course of 9 months, all of a sudden on the same week at the end of that, you know, they both decided to do that independent of each other.
sure.
I mean, it could be. But I'm just saying, to me, it seemed to be a little fishy. And mm-hmm. Particularly when I talked to them and said, hey, well, you guys didn't even tell me you wanted this stuff, and I've got this stuff here. They said, no, we don't. It was, yeah. And then, of course, it was blame it on the family. And actually, they're trying to blame it on me, probably, which was just really irritating. Maybe that's why they thought I was going to be mad when I saw them. Maybe they thought I was upset because they're going to make, you know, me be the bad guy. I don't know. But anyway.
Interesting. It's never a dull moment with you, Mr. Greer. That is for sure.
Every
minute of every day is filled up.
Stay tuned. It gets better. We've got some exciting stuff. Awesome. It'll be a fun press conference. I'll let you guys know when it's going to happen. But, people that follow the trial, we're getting, you know, now, you know, that we've got through the trial, putting more pieces together, there's still stuff there that's connections still being made.
Wow.
I haven't seen much activity, though, on the wires here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the beginning, when people were putting stuff together, there were a lot of connections being made everywhere.
Right.
Did people not, you know, they couldn't file the trial that close because the media, you just get the media interpretation. I tell you, the San mm-hmm. Diego Union was not optimal in my book, the way they presented things. I'm thinking, are we in the mm-hmm. same trial? Because
it looked
like this.
It's too bad they didn't live stream the whole thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know what? They did film the whole thing. You're right. They did not
mm-hmm.
live stream it. But, you know, but they're probably going to.
That would have been perfect.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know.
Yeah, it's a lot. I have 2,000 pages of transcripts if anybody's interested. That's a dry read.
Right.
But
I'll say that is. That's probably pretty exciting, actually, if you're into the case. Kind of all kinds of stuff going on there.
Well, hopefully see it in the book. You haven't known, Trisha, I've grown a beard now.
You
I've
have?
Grown,
oh,
I've,
see,
I've
I got to come
a,
down for the
I've
press just, conference. I got to see
it's
this.
Just, it's my book beard.
Yeah,
because
it
I'm not
be
shaving,
a, yeah,
I'm not shaving it off until the book's done. When the book's done, I'm shaving the beard.
Perfect.
When, you see me
so
with...
When do you think?
Oh, my. You know what I'm learning is books take a lot longer to write than you would think.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
You might have
so,
a ZZ Top beard before this is over.
Yeah,
all the way
yeah,
down your belly button.
Yeah, yeah. You know
that
what? It probably won't last that long. I will probably have to shave. My wife really doesn't like it. It's, we will always kiss each other hello and goodbye. And those bristly whiskers just don't make that an enjoyable
don't do
thing.
It.
It's like barbed wire.
Oh,
yeah.
Dear.
So,
that's no fun.
But that's no fun. Yeah. So, but it's but for now anyway. Maybe I should shave it when I think I'm reasonably into the book.
There you go.
Be more reasonable. Be more reasonable here. So, but
that's,
there's really a lot of fun stuff.
Well, cool. I would really truly like
always
to come down
pleasure.
To the press conference. I think I might do it. I know some people that live there, and I'll hit them up, and we'll come down and wave at you, okay?
You know what? I'll give you plenty of advanced warning.
Oh, dude, that'd be great.
The family will be out here for that.
Wonderful.
So you can meet them. It would be nice. I'm sure they'd appreciate
that.
Meeting you. And,
I would love to meet them.
Yeah,
that would be fantastic. So let's kind of go back to the beginning. What is your exact next step now?
Depending on timing, I think we have a 6-month window from December 7th, was it, the press conference?
Mm-hmm.
to file a civil action against the sheriff.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd like to get the submission to the coroner's office at least a month before that. So probably April, May, maybe May, get the submission into the medical examiner, and then June we would have to file an action against the sheriff.
Got it. Okay, it we'll put that down on our calendars and make sure that we follow up with you. And if anything happens before then, let us know. We can do another show. We can talk about it on the website, whatever you need, okay?
Wonderful. Thank you.
You bet.
Look
and
forward to it.
We've already had a complaint, apparently written. There's a little blog thing that people can write questions on Blog Talk Radio, which is where we're doing this, and somebody wrote something like, so, Tricia, did you get your share of the $600,000 to go with your gambling habit for making him look guilty or something? You know, it's like, oh, well, yeah, that's exactly what happened. How did you know? It just astute people out there.
I got some, I have some, there's a handful, two or three people that are on Twitter. And I use my Twitter account to do all my updates. Anybody that's at Greer Lawyer is my Twitter account. And so I do that regularly. And there are two or three people that are just mean-spirited and really pro, you know, Shaq Nye, anti-Zahow. And I get responses like, you know, what did you bribe the judge? How did you framed Adam Shaq Nye? And really, you know, just mean spirited comments. You know, I mean, sleazeball, slime bag. Those are niceties compared to the kind of stuff. That's what Adam called me at that last. He had 20 minutes unplugged of dialogue after our last hearing. And sleazeball was big. But you guys should look. There was a you can get it online now, too. Adam's comment when he was asked, did you murder Rebecca Zahow? And he responded something to the effect of, I wouldn't waste my time murdering Rebecca Zahow.
That was such a bizarre.
That's weird. I know. And then went on to say, like, I was the only one who was nice to her. You know, Jonah's friends and family, friends didn't like her, and nobody liked her. And I was at least, you know, maybe the only one that was nice to her or something along those lines. But this, the way he said it, it was so demeaning, and it made him look like he was thinking he was so superior, you know, which it was just really, I listened to it over and over and over, and wow, okay, there's something deep going on there.
That's creepy. That's very creepy.
Yeah, yeah. I guess that's the word. Yeah, I guess that's a good word for it. Yeah,
creepy,
so.
Absolutely. Well, on that creepy note, Mr. Greer, thank you again for your time. I really appreciate it. We'll be back in touch very soon, okay?
All right. Thanks, guys. Always a pleasure.
Take care now. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Cynic, thank you so much. We will see you on Web Sleuth.
Well, my friends, that's it for this edition of Web Sleuth Radio. We'll be back sometime soon with more incredible true crime stuff. See you on websleuth.com. Take care now. Bye-bye.